back inside the cave. 96.5 FM, 965thecave.com. It's now time to talk some Michigan State football here inside the cave. I'm Ian Wendt. That's John Roberts. We're joined on the phone by Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports. We had a week off last week, but happy to talk to you again this week. So we got to, you know, talk about what has happened, and we'll look ahead a little bit to Michigan this next weekend. But we didn't get a chance to talk after Ohio State. I don't know if that was by design or not, but, the Spartans taking on the Buckeyes. Can you give us a quick breakdown of what happened there?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was basically what most people thought would happen. You know, I don't think it was any better or really any worse. I mean, it was pretty much a thorough beatdown. Ohio State came in and did exactly what they wanted to do. They faced basically no resistance, throwing the ball, you know, and that's been the story of Michigan State, right? Is anybody with a competent passing game can kind of have a walk in the park against this defense. And Ohio State obviously is much, much, much better than competent throwing the football. So I think it was 7 of their first 8 drives were touchdowns. And the one out, you know, the one exception was the pick 6 they threw to Chuck Brantley and sort of, you know, injected some false hope maybe into Michigan State for a few minutes, and then it was just back to the touchdown parade. You know, it was a lot like last year where they went 7 for 7, I think it was, 7 drives, 7 touchdowns, and just ended that thing. So that's, you know, like I said, it was about as bad and bloody as I thought it would be. But on the other hand, I mean, I don't think anybody reasonable really expected them to be that close to Ohio State. I mean, these are still programs operating on 2 different tiers, you know, very different right. tiers. And so, you know, I didn't think that there was any, you know, it was like I said, it was everything I expected. I don't think it was a black eye because it was kind of what we expected in terms of just the sheer talent discrepancy.
All right, that's enough talking about that debacle. So after that loss, gives Michigan State 4 losses in a row. How much of a must-win was Wisconsin this past weekend? I mean, it had to be just as much of a must-win as you can get.
Yeah, I would agree with that, absolutely. Because, I mean, that game, when you zoom out and look at the rest of the schedule, like, that game was critical to turn this thing around. You know, I'm not saying they will, but if they're going to turn this thing around and make a bowl game, which really, other than beating Michigan, is really the only other, like, tangible goal left, and I would argue it's the more important goal by far, you know, just in terms of program trajectory, long-term health of things, and trying to get back on track. You need that one, you know, because I don't think they're going to beat Michigan. I don't think it'll probably even be that close. And right now I'd still say going to Penn State at the end of the year is a really, really tall task for this team. So Wisconsin was one of those teams that you circled and said, all right, this is one they got to get if they're going to reach that 6-win plateau. So, yeah, absolutely a must-win. I thought they came out and sort of played with that desperation. And, of course, you know, one of the very interesting things about it all was that they came out and played 4-3 defense for basically that whole game with 3 linebackers, moved Jacoby Wyman off the line of scrimmage and moved him back to the middle linebacker. And he has a really nice day, but beyond that, I mean, I think it's really fascinating that they implemented that huge change in the middle of the season. And, yeah, it could have been just on time, right? Because Wisconsin plays that, you know, double-tight, smash-mouth football. Michigan plays a similar brand of football. Illinois plays the same brand of football. Those are the next 3 games. So I think odds are pretty good that they're probably going to stick with that system moving forward for at least this next immediate stretch of Michigan and Illinois.
And, Stephen, this is John Roberts. One of the things that I thought coming into the Wisconsin game was this might be a team that MSU matches up better with because of that double tight, run the football type of style. And so you mentioned something interesting there. I think that that's going to allow them to maybe hang with Michigan a little bit more. I just anticipate a much closer game than a lot of people think. Maybe I'm...
This guy's crazy, Stephen. Don't let him fool you.
Maybe I just think... Because the other thing that you mentioned is winning this game really is their season. If they win this game, they have a much better chance to get to a bowl game, get those extra practices for young players. I think they're going to go into Ann Arbor next weekend and play much better than a lot of people are going to are giving them credit for right now.
Sure, I think you make a good point. Like, and then I'm sort of, I still think it'll end up being, you know, a two touchdown game probably at the end. But I do think, you know, this is a better matchup for Michigan State. As goofy as that sounds, and look, Michigan has looked really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I think Michigan has answered every test that's come their way. Whether it's, you know, okay, so they played three bozos at the beginning. Nobody cared. Nobody respected that. But right. Can you go on the road and win? Boom, you go to Iowa and win. Can you beat some? Okay, that's great. Can you beat somebody of substance, though? Because nobody thinks Iowa's very good. Boom, you just beat the brakes off Penn State.
Right.
And Michigan's answered every test. And they look legit. But I do think stylistically they're about as good of a matchup as Michigan State could hope for, because they're not that explosive, over-the-top, 80-yard bomb, you know, type of offense like Ohio State, or even to a similar degree like Washington. You know, we saw what happened there. They're not this quick strike, super explosive, super athletic, you know, lightning in a bottle type of offense. They are more in a phone booth, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of thing, just velocity-wise. Now, of course, they break big plays, and they've got an extremely good offensive line. They've got a great running back and a couple good backs, and, you know, they can crease you up and have big plays that way. But it's not that, like, dynamic, oh, my gosh, there's, you know, six pros out here, and how do I stop all of them at the same time,
right,
type of thing. So I do think that plays into Michigan State's hands a little more. I still think over four quarters they're probably going to get worn down. And like I said, I think it'll be at least a two-touchdown game at the end. But stylistically, I do at least give Michigan State a puncher's shot, because it's not like that Ohio State type of offense.
Talking with Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports. Going back to the Michigan State win against Wisconsin, you talked about the defensive scheme change. I think the obvious question is, why did it take 2-4, losing four straight games, all the criticism, to now change up the scheme? Like, is it, you know, like, it seems a little late to me to try to fix it with a scheme.
Right. You know, I mean, it's tricky, right? Because so with a 4-3, you're bringing a linebacker on the field. You're taking a defensive back off from their typical base of the 4-2-5. So, I mean, other than the Minnesota game, which I would have understood, but, like, other than that, that's really the only game where, at least on paper, that would make sense. And, look, I get the defense wasn't working. I get they were giving up everything and, all the yards, all the points. But, like, just on paper, if you told me, all right, we're going to go play Michael Penix and those receivers out in Washington, let me take a coverage guy off the field. Let me put a guy who's 20, 30 pounds heavier, you know, and, you know, a couple tenths slower on the 40 out there on the field. Like,
yeah.
Is that going to make me better against a spread-you-out explosive passing game? I don't think so. You know, Tua Tagovailoa of Maryland and then his receivers, Dante Bemis and Rakim Jarrett. Is another linebacker going to make me stronger against those guys? Probably not. Tanner Morgan and Mo Ibrahim, that offense that was much more run first. I get that, and maybe they could have done it sooner there. But otherwise, Wisconsin, as we all know, is that traditional, you know, double tight fullback power type of offense that just makes sense for. So I get it was an obvious change, and everybody celebrated that, and it worked. Like, that's their best defensive performance of the year, one of the best statistically of the Mel Tucker era, but. I don't think necessarily moving to the 4-3 earlier was the silver bullet either. Cause like I said, just personnel wise, you're taking a smaller, faster guy off the field for a bigger, clunkier guy against these passing games. I don't think that was necessarily the answer. As I've mentioned on my previous, you know, appearances to you guys, I think there are other things they could have done defensively that maybe weren't being done, but hey, they made adjustments here that I guess I got to tip my cap in that regard. Right?
Switching sides of the ball, I want to talk offense for a second, because it's been a minute since Michigan State has scored 34 points in a game. Peyton Thorne was 21 of 29 for 265 and two scores, no interceptions. And Jaden Reed, 9 catches, 117 with a touchdown. What was it like to see those two finally connect after, you know, what seemed like a fall hiatus?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, no. That last touchdown, I mean, the winning touchdown to Jaden Reed, like,
I mean, yeah.
How many times have we seen that, right? I mean,
right.
It's all the time. I thought right back to the Michigan game last year in that same corner of the end zone, actually, where I think it was like a 4th-and-1 where he went up and got it. And then Penn State, you know, he went up on top on somebody. Mm-hmm. The Pitt game, he goes upstairs. I mean,
yeah.
That's just like, yeah, I thought it was like a vintage Jaden Reed game in terms of, yeah, that play where he goes over somebody. And the guy is just, I always say he's too good at 50-50 jump balls for being somebody who's, you know, barely 6 foot, barely 180 pounds. You know, he's way too good at that for his measurables. And I mean that in a complimentary way, obviously. But we had the whole Jaden Reed package. He had the elevator play. You know, he had some underneath catch and run stuff where he's breaking tackles in the open field. And then he had the punt return, which, of course, doesn't count with the penalty. But, you know, you still see the ability. You still see the elusiveness and the feel for blockers, the instincts, you know. And I asked him the other day about having his punt return against Akron taken off the board. He just sort of smiled and said, yeah, well, it's on tape, you know. So he's basically saying, as long as the NFL can see, you know, what I can do, it doesn't matter to him too much if it's in the box score, if it's in the history books. So very good to see. And I think that's this offense's path forward, right? When you can't count on your running game, when you can't count on a lot of things, you know, like their weapons have to be weapons. And it wasn't just Jaden Reed. I thought Keon Coleman, you know, showed himself and had a nice day. And like that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying weapons have to be weapons. The way Coleman goes up and grabs those two touchdowns, like, and just outbodies the defender, like, that's not a play call, that's not a scheme, like, that's just a guy being better than your guy, or just a guy being 6'4 with a 40-inch vertical and putting that to use. You know, Malik Carr, that big 70-yard catch and run he had, like, that's just a guy making a play. So I think that's the offense's path forward, is their skill players on the perimeter being in position like that to just make individual plays and let those individual talents shine, because I don't think there's much else that week to week you can count on.
Steven, we're going to switch gears here a little bit. During the break off air, we talked a little bit about the other sport that you're going to be busy covering here in not too long, and that's the Spartans basketball team. Give us maybe for the listeners a little preseason preview of what we can expect out of Tom Izzo's team this year.
Sure. So the big offseason storyline was, you know, will he or won't he in terms of heading any transfers. He did not. So they're shorthanded from a scholarship standpoint. I think it's 10 guys instead of 13 on scholarship. And the major question mark was, would he go get a transfer center specifically? You know, they lost Marcus Bingham Jr., the starter. They lost their backup, Julius Marble. And that just left them with Madi Sissoko, who's really been an emergency guy, you know, hasn't played originally from Africa, hasn't played a ton of basketball over his life, you know, and now he's a junior, and they're going to be asking a whole lot more of him. And then they brought in two freshmen to play along with him, Jackson Kohler, who's more of an offensive guy, you know, very polished low post scorer, and Carson Cooper, who's another true freshman, sort of a late bloomer, just big body, 6'11", 250-ish, you know, somebody they're really trying to, a little bit more of a project big, but I do think you'll see him this year. That's the biggest concern by far, is that center position, and do they even, you know, do they have one? Do they have a rotation? They're going to have to go small out of necessity there. Like, nobody can really square what that center position is, and I think there's a lot of people waiting to point the finger and go, see, Tom, we told you. You know, why didn't you go get a transfer here? This is a crippling weakness. I think there's a lot of people who are prepared to, you know, that already have that one in the jar. And we'll see, you know. You know, we'll see what Izzo's evaluation pans out to be. Elsewhere, I think the backcourt could be, you know, I saw A.J. Hogard made headlines. I kind of believe him, though, like when he says they have the best backcourt in the Big Ten. You know, they're in that discussion for sure. I think A.J. Hogard, the junior point guard, is poised to become sort of a household name in the league. I think we saw that through the last, you know, half dozen to 10 games last year, where he really flashed and sort of started to assert himself a lot more. I think he could be a first-team All-Big Ten type of player, you know, a true difference maker. Tyson Walker playing alongside him off the ball, I think, could be nice. Jay Nakins is a guy that they're expecting to take a big, big step. He had the preseason injury, but He's expected to be back by the start of the year, just an explosive, springy sophomore guard. They're going to expect him to do a lot more than just hustle and defend this year. He's going to have to score, and a word over the summer was that he was doing that a lot better. His jumper is coming around. Same thing for Pierre Brooks. He's going to have to score more with Gabe Brown and Max Christie gone, but they're pretty loaded in the backcourt, and they should be fine there. It's just that center position, and do they have enough to hold it down in the front court? And, you know, on paper, it seems like they have this veteran core that you would like, but then they have some other issues that you just don't know yet. On the flip side, though, the Big Ten looks to be as winnable as ever, as up for grabs as ever. I don't think there is a dominant team, and I think Michigan State's kind of hanging around the bottom of that top tier, maybe. I know Indiana has been voted as the preseason favorite, and a lot of people like Michigan, too. Some people like Illinois. And then it's kind of like Michigan State, Purdue, maybe Wisconsin jumbled into that mix there. So I just don't think right now it doesn't appear to be that there's any dominant team. So even if this isn't one of the all-time memorable Michigan State teams, I think it's a conference that's, you know, up for the taking. And maybe they could find their way into contention late in the year, even if, you know, they are shorthanded scholarship-wise. Maybe they aren't the most talented, and maybe they're definitely not the biggest. But I could see a scenario where everything clicks and comes together, and we're talking about Tom Izzo pushing for another Big Ten championship, around at the end of February.
And just for me, A.J. Hogard last season, like right from the jump, from freshman to sophomore year, that leap he took, yeah, if he can do that again from sophomore to junior season, look out, because he can do a lot at point guard. Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports joining us today. Stephen, if people want to read your work and all the great stuff you put out there, what's the best way for people to do that?
Sure, just go to SpartanTailgate.com. That'll redirect you to our homepage there and everything, and that's where all my articles will be and everything there. I'm on Twitter at StephenM_Brooks. Most of my articles and content and everything goes there, and, you know, just other little bite-sized updates or bad jokes or commentary on this and that, whatever. So those are the main two places where you can get a hold of me or just see what I'm up to.
All right, name of the website one more time.
SpartanTailgate.com.
Well, Stephen, I appreciate you coming back this week. And we got the bye week for the football team this week. And then, next week it'll be the breakdown of Michigan State. Looking forward to it. Thanks again for your time today.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Take care.
Will do. Bye. Once again, Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports talking some Michigan State here on Inside the Cave.